The Angsty Christian Podcast is a mature show that deep dives into the problematic aspects of the modern church. Some content might not be suitable for all listeners. Content warnings can be found in the episode description. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to... welcome back to the Angsty Christian Podcast.
You good?
No, I'm not. I'm Jake. I'm your sick lad this week, because fun fact about me, I have COVID, and I'm currently dying on the Zoom call that we're on. Don't worry, we're all home. We're all safe. But,
One might say that you're our sick dick.
Well, okay, yeah, I guess. Sure, I don't like the term sick dick.
Hey, nice cock.
Nice. I can't even do impressions right now. Fuck. Fuck COVID. All my homies hate COVID.
He's just a COVID boy.
My God. I'm going to go back to playing video games. Undescript video game. Do the rest of the intros. I'm going to disassociate.
Okay. well, I'm Bob. Usually I would say I'm your deconstruction baddie. But I'm not feeling very much like a baddie this week. I'm just existing.
So are you the deconstruction saddie?
I don't think that's quite it either. I think it's just like a neutral anxiety. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You're whelmed. You're not underwhelmed. You're not overwhelmed. Whelmed. You're just whelmed.
Yeah. Mm. Exactly. Are we doing fun facts?
Oh, yeah. Fun fact, yeah.
Okay. The fun fact is that I'm sick.
My fun fact is that yesterday I burnt both of my hands in two completely separate incidents. The first time I was straightening my hair like they do most days, and I dropped the hair straightener, and because of my super fast reflexes, I also caught it.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So that was painful.
Wow, that sounds horrible.
It wasn't fun. And then, you know, I couldn't just keep dropping it, so I had to, like, hold it for a few extra seconds until I got it to the counter.
Makes sense.
It was... And then the second time, I spilt boiling water all over my other hand.
Ah!
You know, I'm in pain.
You're in Spain, but the S is silent.
Yeah, exactly.
Ouch. I'm sorry. That sounds rough. That sounds horrible.
Yeah. Well, Dale, tell us about your chronic illness or your injuries or whatever.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Daniel, your deconstruction daddy. I didn't think of an illness nor of an injury that I currently have, and I do not feel like trying to think of one at the moment. So my fun fact originally is that I got a sourdough starter recently. I named him Frankel. His father's name is Frankie, and his grandfather's name is Franklin. And so originally it was going to be like Frankfurter or Frank. But I decided to go for Frankel because I'm a fucking psychology nerd, and I love Viktor Frankl. Frankel, so
love Frankel.
That. Yeah, he's big. He's going to become bread soon. We're going to get this bread. Well, we got something super exciting for all of you. We just finished recording it. We have a really dope guest. You probably already know at least their name. You may not know who they are, and you might know who they are. They are a big TikTok person, And they do a lot of really funny stuff. We got TikTok's very own pastor. And that is a sarcastic turn. So if you get triggered by hearing the word pastor, I understand. I am there with you. It is 100% sarcastic. Just look up their videos. But let's go into our really dope interview. I think y'all are going to like it. Some quick triggers. There is some Jesus language, some experiences in the fundamentalist church and stuff that is shared. So obviously, you know, some general spiritual trauma. And he does talk a little bit and quote from the Bible a little bit, but I think it's in a way that isn't what you may be used to hearing from pastors. And so we're going to turn over to our interview with Gavin Dees.
Gavin Dees!
All right, everyone. So you may know him as the millennial church pastor, as TikTok's pastor, or as some dude named Gavin. We are super excited to have Gavin Dees on here with us. And I could see Jake smile. I know he wants to make a joke. he's saying no. But we are super excited to have Gavin Dees with us. Gavin, first, thank you for being here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, man. Super excited, honored to be here and connecting with y'all and all of that. But a little bit about myself is I do content for a living in social media. And I started probably about a year and 4 or 5 months ago. And I just started making TikToks and it kind of just evolved and all of that. So, and now I'm able to be a full-time content creator and was raised in church. I've been in church since I was probably 8 years old. So I was around it for a while, but then during the pandemic, like a lot of other people would just, I don't know, feel like I just left the church and I was just kind of over it. And, just went on this journey of, I don't know, just discovery and all of that, because pretty much my entire worldview came collapsing down through a number of different things that happened in my life. And so that kind of just led me to like, yeah, I'm kind of over church. This just doesn't work anymore. So, but yeah, and it's just being able to express myself and make content. And my ultimate like passion is just being able to make people laugh and just connect with people that way. So it's a little bit about myself now.
That's great. So you got pretty big on TikTok. At least I found you a while, like I think probably height of the pandemic. With the millennial church videos, and that kind of originally got me interested, because I was like, okay, someone's not gonna be doing these millennial church videos unless there's a story, unless there's like a reason behind that. And so you talked a little bit about like this idea of discovery, this idea of it's just not working anymore, kind of over church. So definitely, like, would you mind sharing just like what was your experience with the church? What kind of like, what was that trajectory like, kind of that turning point? And then obviously like the whole millennial pastor thing, like kind of how did that launch off?
Yeah. My experience with the church is I've been in church since I was 8, and I've never said this like out loud, but like what I wanted to be kind of like growing up, which like makes me want to throw up now, but I wanted to be a pastor and I wanted to be in that lane. So that was kind of what I was going for. And that was the path that I was going down and all of that stuff. And so I was super into church, but I think, right before the pandemic, my wife and I were on like staff at a church working and all of that stuff. But then watching obviously the pandemic and then watching just social issues. And for me, the story that transformed my life was Ahmaud Arbery. And then watching how the church was just handling social issues as they all started to come up. And then my wife being Mexican-American, watching political views just start to come out, and it just starting to see my wife with different subject matters such as immigration, and watching our pastor just talk about different things. And it was just like stuff that we've never known, but I think the culture was just starting to bring everybody's true colors out. And so that's kind of like what kicked it off. And I was just like, this feels hollow. It was like one day to the next, it was like the material that we were talking about just became irrelevant overnight. And it made me realize that the subject matter that we're talking about is not relevant to real people. It's just relevant to church people. And so, and then I remember fast forwarding, like we just started taking like a step back and we were like faking being sick. And we were just like, man, dude, we can't keep doing this. And then long story short, we ended up having a conversation, left the church, and I just started making TikToks. And I started making like kind of Christian comedy and stuff. And the more I deconstructed, I was just like, I don't even know if I'm a Christian anymore. I can't even stand the figure of Jesus right now. All of this stuff. And then fast forwarding, like probably 6 to maybe 9 months later, I started like, I saw this like kind of, I don't even know who it was. I don't remember the content creator, but it was some kind of choir, weird looking like thing, like a ratchet choir, I think was like one of the lines in it or something. And I was like, man, this is really, really cool. So I tried to like create that. And then my spin on it was like, what if I just bring in the millennial culture and then bring in something like the traditional church and we mesh it? And I'm going to take every song that like, the more vulgar it is, I'm going to bring it together. And so with something that was so sacred, like the church. So it started out kind of like a middle finger to like church and like, man, fuck this. And I'm like, I don't really care about any of that. But then I started reaching people who had been hurt by church. I was not preparing for this, but then I started getting thousands of messages from Instagram and TikTok. And it was like, this is oddly helping me heal. And so my intention behind it started to evolve over time. And I was like, this really, really represents something of like what I've understood God to be was so sacred, something just untouchable. I'm about to bring it down with this music because my framework now is that God isn't just some person. It is just the essence of life behind everything. So it's at the center of everything. And there's nothing separate from it. So I'm bringing these things together and it just is like hilarious. So it's so shocking when you see it. And you're taking these songs and it's like, yo, I used to listen to this, but I'm like, why is a pastor shaking his ass to this? Or why is this happening or whatever? So that's kind of like how it, in a nutshell, how it kind of just like started and all of that. And now we just do a Sunday service and people are like, what's up, Father Gavin and Pastor Gavin and, all this stuff. And so I started just building these church characters, like pastor, choir, I started bringing in God, a Jesus figure, all this different stuff. And so, I really, really love making them.
I want to leave space on Bonnie or Jake. Do either of you have a question?
Yeah. So you mentioned that there was like it was over the pandemic that made you kind of realize a lot of the toxicity that happened in the church. That's the same thing with, that happened to me. I think it happened to Daniel as well, although he was starting to see signs before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Was there ever like a straw that broke the camel's back kind of moment, or was it just all like, or maybe just one moment that just drove you over the edge entirely?
I think it was a number of things. One of the things is when I heard like the church that I was going to at the time, saying just Black Lives Matter was a fraud. That was one of them. And watching just, we're not marching for George Floyd. So it was like our church was kind of divided over going to march and going to be a part of these things. So that was one of them. And then right in this, like my mom comes out of the closet. And so I had been kind of deconstructing in that area amongst like just sexuality in general. But then my mom comes out and it was just like, but I was still kind of in the in-between phase. And I was like, holy, this is insane. I was like, my worldview is just collapsing. So, and then I lost a very near and dear person to me. She was at the time just like someone I viewed as like my spiritual mother. And she was just like everything. And then she passed away due to COVID. And I was just like experiencing one blow after the other. And so I think there's a number of things that I was just like, what I've believed is not holding up anymore. Like I can't paint it perfect and all of that. And so that's kind of what those are a few things that really, really like stood out to me. And then in my personal like heart, I had buried and suppressed like kind of the Old Testament God that I'm like, I have deep issues with what's going on here, but I don't want to talk about it. I'm done with it. I just had been suppressing it probably for over a decade, but it started surfacing. And I was like, this is a violent book. I was like, this is just insane. And I'm like, I was kind of overwhelmed at the beginning and then kind of just was shutting down. And then I was like, I just need to get out of here. So I think it was a number of things, but, those are a few things that definitely escalated like me just like, I need to go.
Yeah. So like after that happened, as that was happening, I mean, that's a very overwhelming situation. I know I can relate, like, you know, for me, it started with like, I was sitting in a church service at a church that I was pastoring, and pastor was talking something about Satan. And I was like, where did we get that idea from? And so I literally just Googled it. And I was like, where in the Bible does it say this? And I was like, looking at it while he's preaching, not paying attention. And like that slowly escalated from Satan to evil, to hell, to heaven. And like, it just continued to go on and on and on and on and on. But that process is difficult. And so could you explain a little bit more what that process might've looked like for you? I know a lot of us who deconstruct, and I mean, deconstruction is a journey. It's not even, I wouldn't even say that you ever are done deconstructing, you know, but with that being said, like, were there ups, were there downs today? Like, John Mark McMillan had was on a podcast actually recently, ironically, it was a, you know, evangelical worship pastor, but he had a really good point where it's like, some days I'm an atheist, the next day I may be identifying as a Christian, the next day I may be agnostic. So like, what was that journey like to today?
It was pretty much all downs. I'll just put it that way. There was hardly any ups happening in my life. And so it just went from I was sure about everything to I'm not sure about anything. So growing up in the evangelical church, you're taught to be sure of everything. So doubt is the enemy. Doubt is something that you're like, no, doubt is not an option. And so you'll do anything and even live in denial to keep yourself from experiencing doubt. So I had to start went through this process of like finally admitting things that I've been just lying to myself about and certain subjects and stories and in the Bible and like seeing how women and children and things like that were oppressed in the Bible and representation. There is no representation with women in the Bible. Like with authority, with like equality and all of these different things. And so that was a big one. And then I kind of like, there were certain subjects that I started to deconstruct that was like, it kind of took me deeper and deeper into just this void that I was experiencing. But I think at the same time, one thing that hasn't deconstructed is there's one proverb that is laughter is medicine for the soul. That's something I've never deconstructed. And that's a truth that I believe that is relevant. And so like TikTok became a lifeline to help me just laugh my way through my pain and help me cope through all of this. And so TikTok was kind of there for me in that way. So that was happening simultaneously. But I think... I think I went from like different subject matters, like the Bible being like the perfect word of God. And then it went to sexuality and then it kind of went into hell. And then it went into like kind of my final round of deconstruction. I felt like is my 12th round, like Rocky here. And then it was like, is Jesus is not God. And this was one that took me a long time to just like, I can't get over the figure of Jesus and stuff. And I've seen that in the deconstruction community and stuff, but it's like, that is the final one that was like, I can't breathe in this space anymore because I don't believe this anymore. And so that was kind of like a down, 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 down. And I would say in the past like couple weeks when I think I hit the fifth stage of grieving, and I've been in therapy for over a year. But I just hit this deep level of acceptance of like, this is what it is. And I'm like, I'm ready to just move on and whatever's next, whatever life has for me. And it's like, I'm ready to move into that. And I don't want to stay stuck in this past, because those people have moved on from me. but I'm still stuck on them. And it's like, I'm just ready to move on. So to answer your question, I think it really is just like, it was a lot of downs. There may be like moments of up, but then I would be right back into uncertainty and just like, I don't know if I believe in God. So I relate to that. Like, I don't know. I'm definitely not a Christian if this is the only way to be a Christian. And so there were times that I definitely consider myself probably maybe more agnostic. I don't think I've ever deconstructed into like an atheist, but I've definitely feel like somewhere between a Christian and an agnostic currently. So
I like to say arguably Christian.
Yeah.
That was, I think, what Bonnie said a few episodes ago. Yes. But I really like what you said like you can't get over this figure of Jesus. I think Kevin Garcia has mentioned it. I know a few others in different podcasts and stuff that have said the same thing. It's like there's something about this Jesus character. Like even as I deconstruct, like I've been in a place like I don't know if Jesus is God. I don't know if I can firmly say if I believe that or if I can even logically say that. But there's something in like the things that Jesus says and the life that he at least lives, and the fact that like so many mystics, so many like wise people throughout the ages have always looked at what Jesus said or even confirmed things that Jesus said, that I'm like, there at the very least, if there isn't divinity behind his words, there's at the very least there's some sort of spiritual wisdom, or not even just spiritual wisdom, just wisdom in the world. And I think you said, well, I wrote it down, like towards the start, you said like this idea of God is the essence of life behind everything. And I remember we talked about this a while ago, but I had a conversation with the pastor where I was quoting, I think it's like Colossians 3:11 or something like that, where God is everything. God is in everything. God is everything, or Christ is everything. Christ is in everything. It's kind of that idea of like, God is the essence of life behind.
Yes.
Can you go a little bit more in detail about what you mean by that? And also like, even like this whole Jesus thing, like a little bit, like expanding on both of those different
phrases. Sure. Sure. Yeah. So the essence is just like, it's like Taoism will put it like the second you try to put language to the Tao, which is God, it immediately stops being God. So it's extremely hard to put into words. It's like, it's in a position to never be understood and yet be able to be fully experienced. So I kind of know like when I'm in that flow, when I'm in that, like people can use purpose, language doesn't really matter. Like they're all just labels, pointers to help us guide us through this thing. But when I feel God, it is just like, I can tell when I'm in that sweet spot of life. And I feel like I'm in that now. I'm getting more and more in that. And it's like, because God is a present reality, that I say God is all things to all people at all times. So I used to be really, really triggered by when people were like, oh, he is good. I'm like, where the hell are women? Where's representation? If God is all things, and it's like, where's women? Like, and so it's like, if it's she, and it's like, I see trans or I see queer people, it's like God can be queer. God can be trans. But like everybody wants God to be kind of on their team, but God is all things to all people at all times. So he's not loyal. Like God, it is not loyal to anything. It is fully present all the time with all of us. And not even just people, just nature. So that's kind of how I view it. And I feel like the language that Jesus used when he said that I am the way, the truth, and the life, I believe he was talking from not his Jesus identity. He was talking from his God or essence identity that we all have. And so the fundamental nature of everybody on this call or everybody listening is I am the way, the truth, and the life. That is the gateway into connecting with God, source, essence, divinity, whatever you want to call it, not the figure of Jesus. Because Jesus was here to point us to that. And man has pointed us to Jesus, which is not right. And that's not how I interpret it. And then as far as Jesus goes, the one Bible verse that I've put into hundreds of people's minds is like, answer me this question. And I'll talk to a pastor, I'll talk to people, evangelicals, zero answers. And it is the scripture when there, I don't even know who he is in the scripture, but he comes up to Jesus and he says, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" Jesus responds, "Why do you call me good? Only God is good." So there's a distinction between God and Jesus. Jesus is like, "I'm normal. You're putting me on a pedestal. And then why do you call yourself bad?" Because I believe in equality. I believe in oneness. I believe in sameness. And I'm not any more holy than you are. And so that's what I hear when I hear that. And so I'm like, okay, there's a distinction between Jesus and God. And then like right before Jesus like leaves, whatever the, I don't even know what exactly happened there. I don't know if it was a spirit or whatever, but his departure, there was a conversation and he used this language that was like, "You're going to be able to do the same as me. And then also even greater things." So I believe his final words were words of equality, words of sameness, words of empowerment. And it's like, how in the hell, if he's the King of Kings and Lord of Lords and we're worshiping Jesus, could you ever fulfill that? It's impossible. So if he really did say that, Jesus really did mean that, Jesus is a complete egotistical narcissist. And which I definitely don't believe Jesus is that. And so that's the one like Bible verse that like I can't get over, and everybody has to give me like an interpretation to it and all of that stuff. And so that's the one thing that it's like, that is what I believe, because that was the one Bible verse that I couldn't get over, is "I am the way, the truth, and the life, that no man comes to the Father except through me." That scripture would trip me up every time. And then when I like had this epiphany, I was like, oh my God, Jesus was not talking about his Jesus identity. He was talking about that God essence, like identity. And that truer identity that you like, that connects us all. And so that, I think we had a conversation like that DM a couple months ago, like we were talking, but you had talked about like that singularity, like these scientists will use that like singularity. That's what I believe, that I am the way, the truth, and the life. That singularity is the pathway into the fullness of God, or to be able to experience it, and stuff like that. So I know that was like super wordy. I don't even know if that made any sense, but that's, and I've really never heard anybody talk about it, but that's kind of like what I view it. And it's made my relation, it immediately made me stop being triggered by Jesus, because he's just a man, and he represents the potential of what we could be as a human species. And it's like, he walked one with God. He modeled that oneness with like us. And it showed me that if he can, so can I.
Really good. I've been thinking through on the way, the truth, and the life. That's one of the verses that I've been trying to like deconstruct for the last few months, you know, and that was really good. But I have a couple more questions, but Bonnie and Jake, if you two have anything, please. I'm still formulating one of the questions.
So like watching your TikToks, you do like the millennial church service and the Gen Z church service type TikToks, and you said like people call you Father Gavin, and I was wondering like how you've seen like church and Christianity evolve through becoming kind of a figure in the deconstruction movement, and how you think like Christianity might continue to evolve through what you've seen.
I think Christianity for me is I think the future of it, if it does exist in the future, is the future is going to be empowering. And so for me, I feel like the model now is set up for all of us to be kind of codependent, because we need a figurehead. But the essence of God is like the fullness is in us. And so in its teachers or podcasts or content that's going to come along, I believe in the future, that's going to help us put us back on the inside and realize that everything in us, we have everything in us already. And it's, we've been so distracted for centuries because we've been central around a person or a figure or a priest or like the Bible. Like humanity's been connecting with God far beyond the Bible. And it's like the Bible does not take up but a speck in history. And so, and it's like, and I think we're going to get back to that and being able to connect. And so I see if there is a church in the future, one thing I still do think the church, and this is something I struggle with, which is like friends, and like connecting with people, is the church has a potential, if it stays intact, is to like create friendships and create community and all of that stuff. And I see a church that is deconstructed, and it's like it's a safe space for all people, like, and I don't know if there'll be like maybe a figure, but that figure would definitely need to be have a more universal, inclusive perspective, and be a, that place would be, and that worldview would need to be a home for everyone. And so but that's kind of like how I kind of see it, but I know it's going to be empowering. And I believe the language that Jesus used is, he used language called Kingdom of Heaven, which is old, and I would never like I hope we evolve in that language, but it's like, but I think the Kingdom of Heaven, he says, you'll never be able to like, look, like, there it is. You'll never be able to say that. So we'll never be able to point at it. We'll never be able to be, oh, that's it. That's it. Now let's try to capture that and like sell it. You just can't. And so, and then the Kingdom of Heaven, he says, it's within you. It's now, and it is right here. The Kingdom of Heaven is this conversation, and it's just bringing that paradigm into our lives. It's into our relationships and into conversation. It's into all of those things. And it's into music. It's into the arts. It's into sexuality. It's into everything. And so, and there's nothing, like, I think Rob Bell put it like this. He said that this, everything is a temple now. And so that's the perspective that I see in the future, that it's like, it's not going to be a building. And if there are buildings, it'll just be for us to connect with people and friends and all of that stuff. But that's just a ballpark of maybe what I see in the future.
Yeah, that was really good. I like the future speak of, it's going to be empowering. I definitely see that as well, especially like with the rise of the Satanic Temple being very similar to the Progressive Christian Movement, how they're both very much like a post-Christian mm-hmm. idea or whatever, where it's all empowering, right? Like I saw something that someone was criticizing, I don't know, but regardless, like there's ex-evangelicals who are criticizing the deconstructing people, and like, we're all deconstructing, you freaking idiots. But like one side is like saying, you don't have any ethic regarding drugs or regarding sexuality or regarding whatever. I'm like, mm-hmm. who cares? We've been told for so long that we can't do X, Y, and Z, and now we get to be empowered to do whatever isn't harmful for us. Granted, there mm-hmm. are things that are harmful or can kill us or others or harm others, and like that's not good. But for the most part, like there's a lot of stuff that we can enjoy now that we were told for so long that we can't. Or mm-hmm. like we were told for so long. I just listened to a podcast that was just constantly talking. And I mean, it was a deconstruction e-podcast. They're talking about like, you know, we're always told that we must become less so that God can become more, quoting John Piper, Johnny Pipes. And like that whole idea, you use the verse, like, where you use the time that the man asked Jesus, you know, good teacher, what can I do to inherit life? And Jesus said, you know, well, why do you call me good? No one is good mm-hmm. except for the Father. And like that verse has been weaponized for so mm-hmm. long to say that no yes. one is good except for God. And so yes. with that being said, how, I'm going to turn the question back on you. How do you interpret that part? Because yeah. you mentioned like, you know, the stuff of Jesus and all that, but like that part specifically, I think is really hard for a lot of people who may be listening. It's even hard for me at times of like, I don't like mm-hmm. that verse because it's been used that way. So how has yeah. that been changed in your brain?
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. My perspective on it now is that there's not a singular identity on the inside of you. Like you are multifaceted and multiple personality. There's a lot, there's layers to you. And so, so I think more in that, specifically relating to that verse, I believe what Jesus was actually saying was, why do you call yourself bad? I think Jesus would never be talking about himself like that. And I think the man came and had a very negative perspective on himself, because he had elevated Jesus at that moment above himself, because the rule is equality, that there is no superiority. And so thinking less of yourself is just as egotistical as thinking too high of yourself. So, because if you do think too low, you've already ranked yourself. So you, at the same time, you think there is someone lower than you. So it is just removing that judgment. And so that's what I hear. And I think that this perfection that we put onto Jesus, like he just didn't do anything wrong, is very inaccurate. And I believe Jesus was a flawed person. All of that. And so, but I think my favorite passage in the Bible that has yet to be deconstructed is Romans chapter 7. And it's just this story. It's when Paul is like, the thing that I know I should be doing, I'm not doing. And the thing that I know I shouldn't be doing, I am doing. And I've always kind of like, anytime I would struggle, I would always turn to that. I'm like, okay, cool. Paul struggles. Okay, cool. That scripture, he gets to this conclusion at the end of it. He says, I've come to the conclusion that it's not my true identity doing it. There is a Paul identity, and then there is a true essence identity. There is the truest identity of you. So that is the God identity. And so for me, I am flawed. Gavin says things to his wife and does things that are not good. Gavin, in the past, like, has done things and had worldviews that were extremely harmful to people. And all of that different stuff. And so it's not like, but I don't beat myself up from it, because it's separating. It's always separating yourself from it until you can start to really connect with, like, that you start to meditate, I am the way, the truth, and the life. But you're not meditating on it as, say, maybe Daniel or Gavin, you're meditating it from a different identity. That, like, so that part of us is craving fuller expression. It's craving more manifestation in this body, in our life, because the future is empowering. It is moving forward. It's not stopping. And God, it is craving to express itself in a greater fashion. So that's my kind of like perspective. And this is honestly the first time I've articulated any of this. So if this is all over the place, I apologize. But I definitely, when I hear that, I don't hear ego. I don't hear Jesus thinks he's a piece of shit and only God is good. All of that, I think that is ego. And I think it always will bring back to, I believe Jesus believes in equality. So I filter all of his words through equality, removing the ego, empowering, equality, sameness, oneness. And then it's like, it is helping me being able to hear those words without the baggage of those 108 sermons or books or the John Piper people of the world that have projected their own insecurity onto something so powerful.
Yeah, so, that was good. Yeah, I you spoke my language of the ego and like the true self versus the shadow self stuff. Like, I mean, when you talked about that verse from Paul, like, that's what I think of immediately. It's that there are things that I should be doing that I'm not doing, and that's all just like our own ego and acting out of that.
Yes, and I think Jesus's perspective was very limited. So, and because his final words is, it benefits everybody that I go, I'm getting the hell out of here. And you guys need to figure this out, because you guys are going to do more than me. You're going to have a greater revelation. So Jesus was extremely limited, but I've never understood that, like, Jesus kind of knew everything. I'm like, no, he didn't. But even again, it's like, I tell somebody, I'm like, oh, Jesus didn't know everything. Jesus is not God. And it just like will wreck people's like worldview. And some people need Jesus to be God, which is totally okay. That is totally fine, by the way. If people are like listening and it's like, I still want to worship Jesus, all things to all people at all times. If it's Jesus for you, if it's that framework, it will work. And that's kind of how I've kind of like let go of the evangelical church. Hey, y'all still want to do this? If you're acting like Greg Locke, that guy, yeah, I have a problem. But if you're just like, I worship Jesus and you're a nice person and like you love people, I don't really care what you do. But yeah, that's kind of like the shadow self and connecting, and it requires of like meditating on that true identity of you. So it can express itself into your thinking, into your emotions, into your body. And that's what I feel like healing is, but you've got to take that leap of faith to set yourself aside for a while, like, and stop thinking about yourself and just connect with like, I don't need to do another damn thing to prove to myself that I'm worth it. I don't have to get in another debate to prove that I'm something or whatever. And it's just like, you are complete and perfect. There is a part of us that is perfect, and that it's just moving. It is expressing itself more and more. And it's just meditating on that. And somehow it finds its way into my Gavin identity. So that may sound insane because it's like just talking out loud. I'm like, oh my God. But this is what I really, really like feel and practice in my life and all of that stuff. So
is there a point where you think the deconstructionalists are taking it too far? I mean, obviously the evangelicals and like all the other folks have been like taking it too far for years and years, but like deconstruction's a newer movement, so it's hard to like, it's hard to criticize people that are like on your side and trying to support you. But is there like one facet that people constantly bring up that you just have to disagree with every time?
Yeah, I think that no two timetables are the same. I know I don't necessarily find home in the deconstruction community. The content doesn't speak to me early on. It was a lifeline. So I think the deconstruction community, I joke all the time. I was like, the deconstruction community in a way meets the evangelical church, because now their material is completely based on what the evangelical church is doing. And the evangelical church needs the deconstruction community, because they're forming so much material around what the deconstruction community is doing. But I think people like are going to, if you take 10 years, if you take 20 years, and it's like, no two timetables are the same. And if you deconstruct into oblivion, more power to you. If that's what works for you, that's what works for you. But I was creeping on, I heard this term nihilism. I was like floating in that ballpark. And I see, to be completely honest, I see nihilism with people who have deconstructed that I've unfollowed. I was just like, I don't know if this person will ever be happy. I don't know if they're ever going to move into an empowered state and like let go and maybe forgive or maybe just like move on. But I was floating in that. I was so angry. But I would never ever come at somebody and say like, you should just like forgive now. Like, hell no. Like, you may never do that. So it's a difficult answer, but it's like, I just kind of wanted to move on and let go and, step out into the true unknown. And it's like where I just don't know and, all of that stuff. And so that's kind of like my perspective towards the deconstruction, like community, because a lot of the material that's being created is kind of some of them are like once an evangelical, always an evangelical, but you've kind of like, you've got new material now and it's deconstruction material. But you're still preaching it back to people. So I see that. But that's just kind of like my 30,000 foot view. I'm not in the intricacies of deconstruction, so I may not be the person to speak the most accurate to it. But that's kind of like my perspective. But I had just kind of floated into the ballpark of like nihilism. Like I had swung from fundamentalism to just like, it is nothing matters. So.
Yeah, I know that it's, I think a very common thing that I've seen with people online, people I know, even myself for a while of definitely falling into that nihilistic point of view of like, there is no hope. And like the one thing that continued to impact me throughout the years is I had a professor once who was talking about someone who I think in college was going through some sort of deconstruction. And she was saying all these things and blah, blah, blah. And he stopped her and he was like, you're a victim of your circumstances. Like there are things that have happened to you. And of course, he wouldn't say this to someone who's gone through like certain types of abuse or whatever. But with what she was saying is like, you've gone through some stuff and that is important and that is valid and that needs to be worked through. However, that was X amount of years ago. When are you going to step into mm-hmm. this idea that you are no longer a victim, but a survivor? And like, I've told that to someone before and they didn't like it. And I'm like, okay, that's why I'm sick of bringing that up. But it's that idea of like, we do have a choice over the level of our happiness and the choice of what we mm-hmm. put our brains through. Like that's what healthy stoicism is, right? Is like, you have emotions, mm-hmm. they're valid, they're okay, but do they serve you? If not, don't pay attention to them, move on from them. Process what you need to process. Even like the Israelites with the way that they grieved and lamented, like the whole book of Lamentations that Jeremiah wrote, the whole point was to say, we need to lament as a group, and I'm going to do it on behalf of everyone because none of y'all seem to be doing it. I'm going to lament and grieve because it's only when we bury something that we are able to move forward into whatever is next. So I really liked what you were saying there. The nihilism is definitely big in with some of the deconstruction people. It got to a point where they were like a bunch of people started circle jerking about like, Mary, did you know, back around Christmas. And I'm standing there, I'm like, you guys are stupid. No, like there's literally this stuff. And granted, was Jesus' birth narrative real? We don't know. But regardless, like you guys are saying one thing. No, she didn't know the intricacies of what Jesus would do in her life. No one knew what Jesus would do. Her expectation of the Messiah was different than what had happened. But like they were like just doing this nihilistic of like, oh, it's easy to make fun of this because we used to be Christian. And I'm like, you guys are just being evangelicals, but just on the opposite end of the polarization. And I find myself there often, more often than not, I agree with ex-evangelicals, ex-Christians, whatever. But there's a lot of times where I'm like, logically that doesn't make sense, or that's a really polarized perspective and that's valid, like that's where you're at, but are you, I like how you said like, when are you going to become empowered? If you're never going to become empowered, then like why are you going down that path?
Yeah, exactly. And I think people are going to start learning this more and more over the next few years, because tribalism is going to keep getting stronger and stronger until people are convinced that it's void. So, and people need to go down the path to discover that, hey, this is empty too. So, but I realized that I could agree with, like, for example, like my political beliefs with a close friend, or a friend, or I'll use a relative. So there's a relative in my life that I've had an extremely broken relationship. We started to bond pretty quickly over our worldview of like, as I started to become more liberal in my political views and all this different stuff, there was a bond that was kind of happening. And I realized that we can agree on every single topic, like every single social matter, and we suck as friends. There is no connection. So, and I think more and more people are going to start to figure that out. And once they finally get through, and it's like, I'm kind of tired of talking about this. We don't talk about anything. It's like couples who only talk about work. It's like, there's no substance. There's no love there. And so for me, that's what I was running into. I'm like, I'm lonely as shit. And I agree with these people. And I'm like, agreement doesn't mean great relationships and great friendships and stuff. And it's like, you can agree with like the Mary, did you know thing. And it's like, hey, I feel very lonely with you. And it's like, so that's kind of what I was kind of running into. And Brene Brown's content has really, really helped me a lot. She has this phrase that it's hard to hate people up close. And so I can tell that I've went back and talked to people, and I'm okay with certain friends that still go to church. I'm like, I'm not trying to debate you. I'm not trying to convince you anymore. I was. And I would prepare for every single argument before we hang out. But now it's like, hey, like you're just a human being. We're on the same team. And I don't believe what you believe. And I think it's a waste of your life, but that's your business. And so that's kind of like, I just have let go of them. And it's just reminding myself, and this is an exercise that I do more and more frequently over these last like couple weeks. And it's literally just like putting your hand on your chest or like wherever you are. It's like, I'm right here. Like I'm here. No one is hurting me. Everything that is happening that I think is happening is only in my thinking. And I bring myself back to here. No one is thinking about me right now. No one is judging me. No one is tweeting about me, all of this different stuff. And it's just reminding yourself that it's like all okay. And just like bring yourself back here. And I do that all the time because I realize all of these, like all of this trauma, I'm like, I had to realize it's all over. It is over. And I actually, I haven't read the Bible in 2 years. And I had this like impression on the inside. Like I used to have, this is gonna be super corny, super Christian. So please forgive me. It's a deconstruction podcast. So, but it was called Secret Place in my phone when I was just a zealot, back in the day. But I had this impression to go look at this folder on my phone. I hadn't written it in over 2 years. But the last thing that I wrote in it while I was at the pinnacle of church, and it said, "Now the Lord said to Samuel, you have mourned long enough." And that phrase, like, you mourned long enough. And I was like, hell yes, I have. I've squeezed every drop. And then that day I went to therapy and I was like, I just, from one day to the next, I was like, I'm good. I don't need to know anymore. Like, and my therapist began to explain this like psychologically, that everybody kind of goes through this phase of like this understanding, but then you hit this place that you're like content and you feel good about what you've discovered. Now it's ready to reprocess and retell those stories and reparent those old wounds through your healed self, that God nature, and you go back to those moments and heal through those. And then you keep those scars with you and you're like, hey, me too. Because over this next decade, people are going to be deconstructing like crazy. And so, and it's like people who have survived those dark nights of the soul to be like, hey, like I've been there. You're not alone. And you're going to be okay. And this is going to be a beautiful ending. And so, so that's kind of like where I'm at. I've drained every drop of anger out of my soul. And I'm just like, that's their business. And I'm not going to make their business my business anymore. And it's like, because I was trapped as shit thinking about them all the time and thinking that they're thinking about me and all that stuff. And it's, I'm like, that's not freedom either. So yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at. And this is really, really, really recent. This is like, I'm talking about days, maybe just over a week, that I just like went from one day to the next. And I was like, dude, I'm done. I'm ready to rebuild. Man, I'm ready to move into this new future, whatever it is, and all that stuff. Cause I don't want to fumble or self-sabotage these good things that are happening right now, because I won't let go of the past.
Yeah. That was really good. I really like that. That spoke to me a lot more than I think I even realized was going to speak into me. Mm-hmm. That you have more than enough. So thank you. Thank you for sharing, especially since that's super recent. I know that probably isn't easy to share at this point, you know, and being that kind of vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Jake and Bonnie, do you have any questions? I have one more question from a fan, but if either of you have any questions.
No, I think we're running kind of towards the end, so.
All right, let's give it up to the fan.
Cool. So this question comes from, Esther Kong. Hopefully I said your name right. So I'm going to switch your question up a little bit, change it up just slightly, just to cut, because I think the start of the question is fantastic. But I think there is a little bit more that I think we could talk about more. So specifically, she was asking how you are currently amplifying or having plans to amplify the voices of Indigenous peoples. And I think that's important, especially as an Indigenous person. However, I kind of want to open that up in general to any person of color, queer folk. Like, how do you plan on, if you're not already currently doing it, how would you use your platform to be able to amplify voices of marginalized folks?
That's a really, really good question. I think over the time, my early on in social media, my video with Ahmaud Arbery, like, because one of the things that I deconstructed is my own realization that I never spoke up or used my privilege or any of that. And so, so for me, that video was a big one, and that I just started to talk about different stories that are happening. So being able to use my platform there, because my audience is probably 60-70% people of color as a white person. So I deeply admire like people of color. And then I think actions speak louder than words, and I don't want to be a voice at one point I stopped saying Black Lives Matter and started saying Black Voices Matter, which meant that you have to stop speaking. And because I noticed, I started hearing from Black people, and it's like progressive white people are equally as frustrating as racist people. So, and it's because like it's to elevate other people's voice. So I may not post about you, but I'm not going to fill in dead air with my voice and add another white man or another white person or another white perspective to the conversation. So staying away from that, staying in my lane is like the biggest thing that I can do. And because there's so many voices that are speaking way more, like on Indigenous Peoples Day, like I did this like whole, I think this is maybe before you, like we had connected, and it was like understanding the land that you're on. And it was like this whole story, and helping people who like, one of the things is like submitting like thoughts, like it's either like ask me a question or whatever, and using stories to elevate other people's voices. So it's like if you follow me and you're like LGBTQ or you're queer or you're trans or whatever, and you're talking to someone who's struggling with your worldview, what's something you would say? So just sharing a story sequence of like their voice. So using my platform to share their voice, or for example, like during the Kyle Rittenhouse, I did this whole graphic slide of like 10 different slides of different Black women and Black men, of their perspective on that case. And so, and I actually went through, like I got flagged and as hate speech in my Instagram, and I've learned, I had to go through this whole appeal process, but like, I guess I lost 1500, 2000 followers in that one post. And I realized that people had reported that as violent speech, and I had to go through this whole appeal process with Instagram. I had lost my monetization, my money, all of this different stuff for sharing Black people's perspectives about the Kyle Rittenhouse case. So that's an example. It's just elevating their voice, and resharing their thoughts. And if I can, where I may be a part of the conversation is, can I make a skit or can I do something funny that communicates the stupidity of what's happening without shaming that person, because I don't want to like shame people, but it's like, but to communicate the what's going on. So, but from maybe a comedic, kind of like how like late night TV, Stephen Colbert kind of does it, to tackle issues from a comedic place. And so that's kind of how I've used it up to this day, but that is definitely very, very important to me. And I think the biggest way that I do it now is I believe actions speak louder than words. And so it's just me kind of staying out of the way and staying in my lane. And so that's the biggest way. And then just resharing other people's voices and things like that. So.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing. I know that is helpful to, I agree. I think there's a lot of progressive white people, myself included, who are more annoying than, or as annoying as, you know, the white supremacists. And so I think there is wisdom in staying in your lane, but also amplifying voices that already exist and are already out there as best as you can with your own platform. I think that's fantastic.
Yes.
Well, I think we're at the end of our time with you. So thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find you? How can they connect with you? How can they support you and the work that you do?
Yeah, you can just follow me on social media at The Gavin Dees, and on TikTok and Instagram. And so that's where you can find me. DM me, let's connect, let's talk. And yeah, so that's where you can find me, connect with me. I'm pretty responsive with my DMs and try to talk to people. So that's the best way to connect and reach me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and giving us some of your time. This is a great conversation. I think a lot of really great stuff came up, and I mean, I was kind of like geeking out at first because you were, I think, the first TikToker that I followed. And so it was like this was just a cool thing for myself. And so I just wanted to say thank you. And I'm sure the people who listen to this podcast will like it as well.
Dude, absolutely, man. And super excited what you guys are doing. And I think you guys have a very different take on certain things. And so it's just, I think it's going to be great for people. So super excited to see where you guys go, and definitely honored to be a part of it and all of that stuff. And so,
well, thank you.
Thank you so much for like sharing your story and your vulnerability.
Yeah, absolutely.
You said a couple times, like, you weren't sure if you were being articulate. You were so articulate, and like everything you said was so powerful and beautiful and thought provoking. So really glad that we got to have you on.
Hell yeah. Damn, that was a really good interview.
Super good.
I know. It's like we were just there.
I think it's pretty good. I mean, when Gavin got off, you know, we were all just kind of sitting there like, oh shit. Like, in silence, you know, we didn't really want to say anything. I don't know. I just kind of wanted to sit there and like drink a glass of whiskey and just think for a while, because there's a lot of stuff that I think came up for me that I was like, oh, I did not think of that way.
There's a lot to unpack following everything he said, but all good.
Yeah. Yeah. Really? No, it was good. Yeah. I wrote down a few different notes of, I mean, like the whole thing of you have mourned long enough was huge. Even the like laughter is medicine for the soul. Like a lot of that was just super, super good. And even just his interpretation of like, I'm the way, the truth, and life, and no one is good except for the Father. Like, all of that was amazing. I also wrote down in my notes early on the 4 points of deconstruction from the Gospel Coalition. And I was going to originally bring it up because I thought it was funny of like, oh, Gavin, well, it turns out the Gospel Coalition is right. You deconstructed and got clout. You got street cred. But, you know, we didn't have time, and also whatever. But yeah, that was a great thing. So I don't know about you guys, but I'm super thankful for Gavin.
Yeah, I'm super thankful for Gavin, and more on the point of, you know, deconstructing and getting street cred. I mean, first of all, where's our street cred? Second of all, maybe it's just because there's actual, like, people out there that are struggling and find this content relatable. Maybe it's basically not that it's the hip, cool thing to do. It's just that these are actual hurt people finding relatable stories. I don't know. Just my quirky take. But who am I? Who? How can you trust me? I'm sick.
Totally sick, bro.
Yeah, no, my sick brain makes me incapable of any rational thought. Yeah. You should just consider all my words the same as saying poopy, stinky doo-doo the entire time. Pee-pee poo-poo. It's all pee-pee poo-poo.
It is all pee-pee poo-poo. Which, did I say that last episode? What I mean whenever I say pee pee poo poo now?
Yeah, no, you gave this wubba lubba dub dub explanation for your pee pee poo poo, and honestly, I don't know, how I feel about that.
Oh, it's stupid. It is pee pee poo poo. It's a nihilistic view. That's just absolutely stupid.
Yeah. Well, here's your call out post in 4K. It's all pee pee poo poo.
Damn. Well, I think it's ironic that Gavin brought up Skillet, because that brings us to our next segment.
Oh, God. I have to do the thing. Hold on. Let's just do this. Do-do-do-do-do-do.
Fucking news. Oh, that's good. Oh, I was like really excited as to what you were going to do for the fucking news segment. We actually got two news segments that are both related. One of them actually does come from Relevant Magazine again. So we're back on to our stupid shit. But I'm going to start first. This one isn't there's plenty of articles that you can find about this. But
Rise and Grind Gamers, we're back on Relevant Magazine.
Rise and Grind Gamers. But this first one is actually from an Instagram post, because I think this Instagram post is so rich and so full of bullshit that we can read, I'm going to read aloud, and it's going to tie into the skillet thing that I had mentioned before. So a week ago today, actually a week and a day ago, so today we are recording the Thursday before this episode releases. What is that? So that would be the 2nd, I believe, February 2nd. Pastor Locke, Greg Locke, this is obviously trigger warning because he's a fucking idiot. Pastor Greg Locke posted up, and I'm just going to quote this, and then we'll talk about it. Read this in all caps. As I mentioned during my, actually, I'm going to read this Mr. Palmer. As I mentioned during my Sunday sermon, we will be having a massive burning, in all caps, at the end of our Wednesday night message this week. We will be in our continued series on, again, all caps, deliverance from demons. We have stuff coming in from all over that we will be burning. We're not playing games, unlike Jake right now. Witchcraft and accursed things must go. In Acts 19, they brought their sorcery and demonism and, in all caps, burned it with the fire emoji and 2 exclamation points. We are well aware of what we are stepping into. Bring it all. Stop allowing demonic influences into your home. I said it from the stage, and the word "the" is capitalized weirdly, but, and I'm saying it here. Anything, and that is all caps, tied to the Masonic Lodge needs to be destroyed. It's a satanic cult, no matter what your Master Mason fish frying grandfather told you. Bring all your Harry Potter stuff. Laugh all you will, haters. I don't care. It's witchcraft 100%, in all caps again. All your Twilight books and movies, that mess is full of spells, demonism, shape-shifting, and occultism. Bring tarot cards, Ouija birds. Ouija birds. That is not a misread. Ouija birds.
Healing crystal. I loved playing Ouija birds as a kid. You know, putting too. Them on a slingshot and flying them at cops. Wait, no, pigs. Sorry. Uh-oh.
Oh, man. Okay, so Ouija boards, healing crystals, idol statues, spell books, and everything else tied to the occult. It's got to go, with 2 exclamation points. If you think we're crazy, then scroll on. We're exposing the kingdom of darkness for what it is. It's time for people to be delivered. We've had people on Hip Mount Juliet. I don't know what that is, which isn't surprising because they hate truth and have loads of witches that can't help themselves, but they're wanting a group to come to the church, break out their witchcraft, and open their Ouija boards. It should be birds, Pastor Greg Locke, while we celebrate. Well, hear me. You're welcome to come, but I promise I will walk over, pray for over each of you, snatch the evil garbage out of your hands, and burn it right in front of your face. We will not tolerate, again in all caps, witchcraft, and we will not be compromised with devil worshippers. Everyone is welcome, but this is gospel vision, and we don't do things like the church down the road or the one you grew up in. We can't unsee the miracles that are happening around us. It's time to break covenant with the devil and grow in the Lord. Get there early. It's going to be absolutely amazing, with 3 fire emojis.
Would be absolutely amazing. I would have actually attended the service if he was said at the end. It's going to be totally epic with a little Fortnite emoji.
So someone, a Satanist, did go, from what I understand, threw at the Bible and yelled, "Hail Satan!"
Woo!
If you were listening to this, please DM us. Please. I will buy you coffee for a week. Like, Jesus, that is amazing.
What an icon.
Honestly, might be my hero.
It's pretty epic. Wow. And my only thought was how many of these people that went to this book burning bought new books to throw into the fire? Like,
oh, seriously.
Perpetuating the market for these quote unquote demonic books. Like, yeah, that's the thing is that if you're going to do this, like, why would you go out and buy new books
for this. Why don't you just burn what you already have that's considered demonic or what have you? I don't know, man.
Well, I mean, to be fair, if these people are truly that conservative and fearful, I don't know if they would own any books other than the Bible.
Yeah. Oh, no, they'd own Narnia because they heard that a Christian guy wrote that one. Oh, they might.
One of the books was in Lord. One of the books they were trying to ban was Lord of the Rings.
My God! Do you think
they have banned Harry Potter? Because
they
Harry
did.
Potter
it's in this. It's in this. By... It's in this.
Oh wow!
It's like the. It's right after the Masonic Lodge.
Wow, that's interesting because that's technically written by a Christian woman. Although, she's spineless. Sucks, yeah. She's a spineless skank with no morals.
Yes, but take like that, the whole
J.K. Rowling.
The whole thing for me with all of this, even Twilight was, I mean, Twilight was written by a Mormon, but the Mormons claim to be Christians.
Yeah, and, but the Christians, or at least the evangelicals, don't want to claim the Mormons.
Oh, no, definitely. And but that's the thing of like, well, I mean, I have my own issues with Mormonism, and my, you know, great-grandfather was Mormon, and yeah, got kicked out because he married a Catholic. But all of this stuff, like, I mean, besides maybe the Masonic Lodge, but like the Freemasons kind of, I mean, they're just a different type of white supremacist, you know, and weird shit. But the rest of it, like, a lot of that stuff is very inherent in Christianity or even started with Christianity, like tarot cards, a lot of like the things they claim to be witchcraft. I could literally deconstruct everything that this evangelical did in one service and point to how it's witchcraft, whether it's manifestation or actually doing a spell of I put this stuff in and so I'm going to get this stuff out of even like the Eucharist thing, like that's a type of witchcraft. Prayer is meditation, which they think is this big Eastern witchcraft thing. Like a lot of what they do is witchcraft, you know? Yeah. And so it's like the whole thing is, I think Bonnie said it well, it's just fear.
Yeah. And honestly, if like the entire time I looked at the hold on, I gotta look up the name specifically of the character, but I was thinking of that one scene from Hunchback of Notre Dame while looking at that, the Hellfire song. What is it? Father Frollo is his name, I think.
It's been so long since I've watched that movie, and I need to watch it again.
Oh my God. Part of me wants to watch it because I think it's very on par with what we do. Let's see. Claude Frollo. Yep. That's the character's name, Claude Frollo.
What about Frollo?
So anyway, it's an entire song about saving me from redemption, but in all honesty, it was a lustful justification to get at this one woman. Basically saying, like, make her mine and mine alone, or I'm gonna burn her at the stake.
Oh, love that.
Wow.
Yeah. No, we should watch Hunchback, because other than a few scenes with Jason Alexander of Seinfeld fame talking about how much he wants to fornicate with a goat.
That's beautiful.
Yep. It's actually a really cool movie.
Yeah, no, I remember loving it as a kid. I just haven't watched it recently.
Just sounds super depressing to me.
I mean, it is. The original Hunchback is pretty dark, like the original Hunchback story. Yeah. But I did want to actually, I do have an article about this event from NBC News, and the second half of the article is actually incredibly good, and it brings in some good points, where in a live stream video, Greg Locke said, "We have a constitutional right and a biblical right to do what we're going to do tonight. We have a burn permit, but even without one, a church has a religious right to burn occult materials that they deem are a threat to their religious rights and freedoms and belief systems." Not just a church, any religious organization, you dumb fuck. This isn't the first time he made headlines. He is permanently banned from Twitter for spreading COVID vaccine misinformation. And he previously described the vaccine as quote unquote sugar water, and said that he'd turn away churchgoers if they wore masks to his services. He's from Tennessee. Mount Juliet, Tennessee part, that is actually where the church is at. It's in their parking lot. So if people wanted to go and, you know, don't actually do anything. If you're going to do anything, take hammers to the walls to find out if there's like thousands of dollars and then bring it back to us. Got it. Cool. But he criticized,
TM, don't joke. All jokes. Yeah, joke, asterisk, joke, asterisk.
Yeah. Winky face. He also criticized Republican Tennessee Governor Bill Lee as a coward noodle waffler. For signing an executive order that would allow the National Guard to assist overwhelmed hospitals during a COVID outbreak. He claimed that children with autism are possessed by demons. Jesus fuck, dude.
Whoa!
He said that the diagnosis doesn't exist in the Bible. Wow. And then, on Twitter, users raised concerns about the event. And I said the same thing. I actually put this on our TikTok when I first saw a picture of it that I got from Reddit. The photo is oddly, not oddly, it confirmed for me what I had been saying when Trump was running for election, where the nationalism is very similar to that we saw in Nazi Germany. And a lot of Trump's language was very much similar to some of the rhetoric that Hitler used, which I know a lot of people were saying that, but I actually had research founded with it, and I think a lot of other people did too. But the picture I literally put up on TikTok, and I said, this is not a picture of Nazi Germany. This is this last Wednesday in Tennessee by Pastor Greg Locke. But there's a giant fucking fire. Like, this fire is probably a good 14 feet high, at least, maybe even 20 feet high. It is a massive bonfire. They're burning all the hipster church pellets that they put behind the stage. And people are throwing things in. And someone even put up a picture of Nazi Germany book burning in 1933 and the book burning in 2022. And it came out as a growing effort for different states that are trying to ban certain books from schools. So they're trying to ban books about racism and sexuality in Texas from their school shelves. And I think in Texas, they're also trying to outlaw any speak about LGBTQ people in general. So like anything to do with anything that isn't heteronormative, you cannot talk about. And so teachers have been leaving left and right because they're like, no, I have a good relationship with this student who is queer, and now you're telling me that I can't talk to them about the struggles that they're having. Bullshit.
Yeah, no, that is ridiculous.
Oh, and then the last sentence is that last month, the Tennessee School Board voted to remove Mouse, which is a Pulitzer Prize winning graphic novel about the Holocaust, from its eighth grade reading list because of profanity and nudity.
So, I mean, I understand age restricting it, but also at the same time, it's like, yeah, don't ban it.
I mean, Jesus. It's the story of a Holocaust survivor. I don't think that should be censored.
It should not be censored. Age restricted, maybe. Like, I wouldn't want little kindergartner Jimmy to read it.
But like, obviously not for an elementary, but I think a middle schooler could, like, I've read that multiple times since sixth grade, and I had no issue with it. Like,
and like, we have kids read the Bible.
Right.
The Bible has a lot of shit.
Yeah, it's arguably worse than probably what's in that Holocaust book. If we actually look at what the fuck happened. Like,
yeah.
So I'm like, if we're age restricting one thing, we need to age restrict other things. Or just understand that people are more mature than we make them out to be. And granted, I'm not going to like have a child read a book about murder or a book about suicidal ideation or, you know, make them watch porn or, you know, whatever that, like, that's stupid. That's dangerous. Like, that's not good. But if we're going to do it to one thing, we need to do it to all things.
Yeah.
Which brings us to our Relevant magazine article.
Yeah, this Relevant magazine. Let's go.
This came out yesterday. Yeah. And I just think it is... I'm just going to read... Honestly, I may read the article, but the title is enough. And it's just very similar to what Greg Locke did. It's in line with fear and with trying to make a war of something. Skillet, so for those of you who grew up in the church, Skillet, you may have known as like the Christian angsty band back in the day. Skillet's John Cooper stated, "It's time to declare war against the deconstruction Christian community."
Lol.
And he said, I don't even like calling it deconstruction Christian. There is nothing Christian about it. It is a false religion. Oh, okay. Actually, the rest of this article is really good. Okay, I'm going to quickly read this. Cooper goes on to question why a generation that claims to love being their most quote-unquote authentic selves is also the most medicated, anxious, and suicidal in our nation's history. It's your fault, John Cooper. Blaming celebrities for leading young people astray. And for all those formerly Christian people who have tried to tell all these young folks that they think they have found a third way, LOL. He continued, their third way is this. It's okay if you're into Jesus, just don't be into the Bible. I'm here to tell you young folks that there's no such thing as loving Jesus but not loving his word. Actually, I disagree, but okay. And then the crowd cheered his words. They said similar sentiments from Christian leaders, which echo similar sentiments from people like Matt Chandler. He recently said, "You and I are in an age where deconstruction and the turning away from and leaving the faith has become some sort of sexy thing to do." Remember, I think we've mentioned that before. "I contend that if you ever experience the grace and mercy of Jesus Christ, actually, that it's not that that's really impossible to deconstruct from." Wait, we haven't on the podcast talked about Matt Chandler and that whole thing. Has that happened? Think around the Christmas time when we took our break. Oh man. There's a lot to unpack there with Matt Chandler's thing, and maybe we could talk about that later. Well, that's like a past news story, so we won't talk about it too much, but, you know, he's saying that deconstruction is sexy. Hell yeah, it is, bitch. But he's also gaslighting by saying that if you ever experience the grace and mercy of Jesus Christ actually, then that is really impossible to deconstruct from. So that's saying that we experienced the actual Jesus Christ, and bitch, many of us we're in it as much as you are, if not more. Like, fucking hell, man. So,
I gave roughly 18 years of my life dedicated to trying to experience the fullness of God, and then I came to this conclusion here. When would it have been enough? 20 years?
Yeah. 20 years? I had to. I gave 50K in student loan debt for this shit.
Yeah. There's a lot.
Fuck you, Matt Chandler.
Yeah, no. Like, how much is my giving and my time and my experience, how much of that equates to how much I needed to give in order to experience the quote-unquote fullness of God? Like, come on. I'm trying my best out here.
Yeah. And, yeah. So, Matt Chandler, fuck you. I do like the rest of the Relevant magazine because they kind of actually do take a, ironically, third way approach to it that I enjoy, and not the third way that is toxic, but there is some truth to what he was saying. However, there's also a lot of bad because they say, you know, there's a fundamental misunderstanding of what deconstruction is by what both Matt Chandler and John Cooper are saying, because they're saying, like, this is a term that's grown in popularity to describe a process of re-examining the faith you grew up with, which can sometimes result in deconversion. Other times it results in your faith looking more or less the same as it always did. I don't agree with that, but most often it's somewhere in between, rethinking the things you always believed and coming to new, different understanding of parts of it. They do mention that it's a common and ancient process. So I know, Jake, you mentioned that in the interview of like how it's a new thing. The term is arguably new, but the process is you can literally go all the way back to Genesis, and the story of Abraham is a type of deconstruction where he is leaving the faith of his family and the faith of the place he grew up with and that he knew to head into a new territory of Egypt. But the term deconstruction has become a buzzword in the last couple years, but it was coined by French philosopher Jacques Derrida as a critique of Platonism. Ooh, interesting. But in recent years, it's been popularized by Richard Rohr and others like him to refer a spiritual journey. I think Richard Rohr started using it in like the 80s or something like that, or someone, or maybe not Richard Rohr, but I know the Naked Pastor did. And yes, and so at some point, every Christian should enter, every person in any faith should enter a process of deconstruction where you re-examine those beliefs. And then they say, and then you enter a time of reconstruction, rebuilding a belief system, ideally with the help of a trusted community. I agree that that is healthy. However, it you may or may not do it, and that's okay. And so I do enjoy that they did bring in that information. But and they also mentioned some people get stuck in a season or find themselves revisiting old seasons they thought they'd already gone through. But in no case is it particularly helpful to accuse these people of quote-unquote false religion or to declare war on them. Cooper's talk had a lot of good points in it, because it is true that celebrities don't always make for great role models, and we should be concerned about the suicide rate in the U.S. Although there is some good news on that front, but the connection to deconstruction, however we define it, is tenuous at best. So I enjoy how they said that, so good job, Relevant.
Good job, Relevant News. We're going to keep a close eye on you, though. We're going to love you, but at a distance.
But, John Cooper, if you do want to declare war on us, fight me, bro.
Oh, yeah.
Let's fucking take it to the mosh pit.
Take it to
Duke it out. We're going to get in this motherfucking mosh.
Yeah, no, that's not the mosh pit mentality. The mosh pit mentality is supposed to be a very supportive place where you beat each other up. Or not even beat each other up, just push each other around.
Yeah, but we're going to take it to the pit regardless. Sometimes people don't leave the pit. He wants to declare war, we're going to do it on his grounds, and we're going to do it angsty. But it's so stupid. He literally was part of an emo band or a punk band, which is supposed to be against the system.
No, he was the original, let's break the status quo, and now here he is following the status quo.
Like, who here is, like, we all follow a religion, whether or not that's a formal world religion or not.
Yeah.
And, like, he's just fucking stupid. It's stupid.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, usually people who are against the system are because they feel like in some way other by it. And then when you get extremely successful like he did, you start to support the system you were fighting against because it's not against you anymore.
Ooh, true. Damn, Bonnie, who made you so smart?
God, I give all the glory to him.
Trigger. Fucking trigger.
Oh my god.
That's the only acceptable response there. Alright, John Cooper, fight me. If you want to declare war on Christians, great. Or on deconstructing Christians, great. Let's go, bitch. One-on-one, final destination, one stock, no items, Fox only, let's go.
Fox only.
And I suck at Fox, and I'll still kick your ass.
Probably. How many times do you think he plays Smash Bros? Well, depends on how often he has sex.
Well, he probably has sex a lot because his wife is submissive to him.
Okay. Yeah, then he's going to suck at Smash. Because that's the thing. That's the thing. People who play Smash Bros, they're always smashing. You just never know where they're smashing.
And they are, and it's not other people normally.
Normally it's not. But when they do, their game is weak. And that's when they're vulnerable and you can strike.
That's when you can throw them off the cliff.
I'm convinced that there isn't a hell. And that none of our deconstruction is going to send me to hell, but me saying all that about Smash Brothers, I'm going to hell for that, and that alone.
So one might say that you're going to get smashed.
Yeah. The only smashing that's going to be happening in hell is all the CBT.
My brain is weird when I'm sick.
All right.
This is a new side of me. I'm discovering myself.
Wow. It is. I like it. It's weird, and I don't understand everything that you're saying, but we're here for it.
I don't understand anything that I'm saying, so let's go. I forgot what I was talking about entirely.
I can remind you. I can remind you what I said. I think we're going to move forward to our next segment of Kenneth.
Yeah, so I started a job at a certain sandwich making place, and
first of all, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. They were desperate, so they chose me.
Everywhere is desperate right now.
Right, no, it's easy. However, yeah, obviously they're desperate because apparently Kenneth is working there.
No way! No way! How is that asshole doing?
Yeah, Kenneth is... What?
How's that asshole doing? I'm assuming that he's doing just fine.
Yeah, well, Kenneth has a new hyperfixation, I guess you could say. And it's the same as every straight white man currently. No. NFTs.
No!
No.
Yeah.
Not, not our sweet, sweet, innocent Kenneth. So coming to NFTs.
Yeah.
So he was training me, and he was mansplaining. First of all, I don't know how you mansplain making sandwiches, but he managed to do that. And that's a misogyny right there.
Fucking Kenneth.
That's advanced misogyny.
That is.
Right? No, and the whole time he kept like, he wouldn't shut up about NFTs and how to make sandwiches. But then it started to get weirdly personal. And he started to tell me all about his love life.
No.
And Kenneth apparently had been dating this girl.
No.
Right? He saw her at church and like, he just really, he said that he felt like in the moment the Lord had called him to pursue her to be his wife.
Kenneth, we've been over this, bro.
I know, it was super cringy. But, you know, throughout their relationship, they had been dating for, like, a couple weeks. And he heard her pray, he saw her in church, and she didn't seem to have the same passionate love for Jesus as he did. And, you know, in a wife, he really wants someone who has that, a deep relationship with God.
Oh, no.
So he prayed about it. He talked to his mentors, and he came to the conclusion that he needed to break up with her because she didn't love Jesus enough.
No, bro!
Right? So cringe. So Kenneth is single again, if any of you ladies are interested. I just want to throw that out there.
Please, after all the stories we've told about Kenneth, anybody who's hot and bothered about him, do you need therapy?
And,
like, I mean,
and
you just have to really love fix Jesus.
And you can fix him.
You can fix him.
Yeah. And him. You'll have all the stories to give to us.
Exactly.
We just won't say that they're from you.
Exactly. If you are dating Kenneth and you want to submit Kenneth's stories, dial 555.
That's a... Okay, well, Bonnie, did he mention us by any chance? I mean, he knows you. So what did he say? Are we cool?
Are we cool?
Like, Kenneth in the pod, are we cool?
You know, he might circle back with some coffee dates with us, you know.
Got it.
Okay. I don't know. I think he's going to pray on it. I think he's still.
Yeah. I did get a message from him recently, and he did say, hey, bro, I just want to let you know I'm still praying for you. That was nice of him. You know, he told me, I'm really enjoying the spiritual journey of yours. I was like, bro, I didn't even respond to him on that one. Don't need to quote Ben, bro. Come on.
Yeah. Honestly, a date with Kenneth sounds very interesting, especially since, you know, he's hyper straight and, you know,
he's not straight.
Well, don't tell him that, or else he's gonna unlock his 17th chakra or however it works. No, he's gonna go Ultra Instinct.
Yeah, and kill you. Yeah, no, he'll never. Exactly. He will never do it. He has to hide it, or else he's gonna, you know, go to hell.
No. He'll activate his final form one day, and we'll be here to support it.
The yassification of Kenneth. I need to see it. Which, sidetrack, but can we talk about Pinocchio for a moment?
Oh my god. The yassification.
Like, every video that I see of that, Scott Hoying from Pentatonix did one, and it was absolute perfection. And I didn't realize it's the new Pinocchio is voiced by Pauly Shore. I'm like, y'all knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
I have to go and see the world.
Audacity to make him straight.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, he has a nose that can grow as long as he wants, you know, like that's gotta be used. That's definitely would be used in a queer way, not in a straight way. I don't know, just saying.
Exactly. Every time you lie,
I mean that could be used in a heterosexual context.
It can, but my point being, I can't explain it, but I feel like Pinocchio having an LGBT moment is just, it makes sense.
I think it does make sense for the character, especially, and like the whole can't tell lies scenario, it's going to go great when he has to explain to Becky why the bangs just don't work, instead of just saying, yeah, they do.
It also would make it really difficult for when he's in, like, if he's in a religious setting, and you know, he's like, "I'm not gay," and it just keeps going longer and longer and longer and longer. That'd be a pretty funny, like,
that. I think that'd be too base for Lionsgate.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
Well, that was our today's segment of the yassification of Pinocchio. Thanks for tuning in.
Stay tuned for the next episode. We will have a more in-depth. But
no, we'll have an entire psychiatric analysis of the yassification of Pinocchio. We're gonna call experts. We're gonna get everyone involved. Yeah. We're gonna call everyone.
Yes, we're gonna get Pauly Shore himself on the podcast.
I hope so.
Honestly, that'd be really funny.
That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, we'll have our people work on it. By our people, I mean me.
Yeah, well, no, our people is only Hugh, me, Bonnie, and also, I guess, Kenneth.
Oh, and Gabe.
Oh, Gabe, yeah, that's right. Yeah. But Gabe is there as a spiritual leader, not as a person who reaches out. All glory to Gabe.
Yeah,
all glory to Gabe.
Amen, Gabe, men.
Amen, Gabe, men.
Well, for our final segment, let's how are y'all? How are y'all doing, really?
I feel like I don't need to answer this question.
Besides like dying from Corvin, how are you doing, Jake? How were you doing before you got COVID?
Honestly, I think getting sick was actually I don't want to say it's a positive thing, because honestly, I'm dying out here. But I do have a good mental health break for my new job. That's great. I started my new job already, and everyone there's fine, but like, you know, I'm still kind of grieving my old job that I loved but had to be evicted from. So sadly. It was definitely, you know, it's been a good mental health break. I've been able to just focus on school, Well, barely, because through all the headaches. But I've been just, you know, sitting back, relaxing, talking to some friends. It's been great.
I've been noticing you've been playing Peggle 2 a lot. What I get the Discord notifications.
Oh. I have not been playing Peggle. Because it is rare for me to support any EA property. We can go into that later, but...
I just keep saying Jake Schroeder is playing Peggle 2. Join him.
Oh, I'm playing on Peggle 2. That's what we named one of the Discord servers that were.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. I love that server with all my heart. And none of you can join it. It's mine and mine alone.
No, I'm in it.
I know you're in it. Bonnie can join it too. I'm just talking to the audience here.
Oh, got it.
Flirtatious Jake is gone. Now we can have sick Jake.
Although, like, a few days ago, you did tweet a thirsty tweet, so.
Wait, hold on. I tweeted something thirsty?
Yeah, you did.
It's unlike me.
I mean, it was in line with last episode. Maybe it was a week ago. I don't remember.
Hold on. Now I need to look at my Twitter to find the last thirsty tweet I tweeted out.
Oh, it could be your Insta tweet. Or your Twitter.
Twitter?
Yeah, famous Twitter, like, you know, like famous Insta.
Oh yeah, that was genuinely thirsty. My hidden account. Yeah. Now that I'm looking at it, yeah, that's funny. Anyway.
Well, Bonnie, how are you really?
I am almost in with the first week of classes. Ooh. And I'm tired.
Yeah.
I'm pretty done already.
Oh.
But just gotta survive the semester and then the semester after that and then the semester after that.
Yeah. And then the semester after that and the semester after that. Yeah.
Until I eventually give up and
start selling feet pics.
Yeah, so how are you doing?
Well, I'm actually doing pretty well. I started dating someone recently, and that's been fun. I've been playing a lot of Pokemon Legends Arceus, because that came out a couple weeks ago. That's been really fun. Sorry, y'all. We lied to you guys. We said we were going to Disneyland. We didn't go to Disneyland. Because when we got there, we found out that the day was closed off for mine and Bonnie's tickets. So instead, we're going next week. We're going next week, guys, in a week from today that we're recording. That's exciting. So other than that, that I think was like a low point, but, other things are going well. I mean, I'm kind of stressed out just because work is busy and like tax season and just other stressors, like, you know, shifting into potential relationship and then like trying to manage my own life and like time with friends and stuff. It's, you know, it's a transition. But other than that, you know, stuff is going pretty well. I am also very tired, but for different reasons.
There you go. We're all tired today.
Yeah, we're a tricycle. We have three tires.
Except all of us are wobbly and not in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, and on that note, I think we're going to head off. And so if y'all don't know where to find us, on Twitter, follow at Angsty Kids. On TikTok and Instagram, it's at Angsty Christian Pod. If you want to email us for anything,
Daniel, we have an outro. We have an outro that says all this information.
Oh, you're right, we do. Oh. I forgot about that. Well, you know where to find us. You know what to do. Anyone have any plugs?
You know what? Coming up pretty soon. Any of you in the gaming space, there is going to be the Runaway Guys Coliseum. I didn't promote them in time last year, but now it's going to be right before their event. They are going to be, it's a
marathon where they do a bunch of funds for direct relief. It's an organization that gives relief to disasters and situations all throughout the world, and they need our help more than ever, especially over the last couple of years with COVID. They've been really striving to give relief aid anywhere and everywhere they can. So look out for that marathon, especially if you're into video games. And if you're not into video games, then either donate to the marathon or just donate to direct relief directly.
I want to plug two really good shows. One, if you liked How I Met Your Mother, they have a sequel show that just started with Hilary Duff and Josh Peck. It is called How I Met Your Father. It is very much so a modern, like 2022 version of the show. I kind of say Friends was like the 90s. How I Met Your Mother was like the 2000s to mid 2000s. And How I Met Your Father is set in 2022. And it's phenomenal. There's more representation of queer and BIPOC folk. And like, it's pretty funny because there's a lot of stuff having to do with like Tinder and all that. so highly suggest that show. I'm very much enjoying it every week that it comes out. Cause I have that Attack on Titan and Demon Slayer, and all those shows are just fucking awesome. Mandalorian just finished as well. Boba Fett.
You nerd, not getting
because it just turns into the fucking Mandalorian. So like,
hey, spoilers.
Okay, anyways, spoilers. What all I was gonna say is the first like four episodes suck.
Yeah,
they do. And then it gets really good. The last three episodes are phenomenal. So watch it, highly suggest it. Like, it was, I just honestly dissociated in the first four episodes. Honestly, there's very few things that you need to know from it, quite frankly, maybe just who certain people are and what's going on, but the rest of it sucks. And then there is the Critical Role show.
That's amazing. Vox Machina is so good.
Yeah.
God,
we watched what, three or four episodes, whatever episodes were out after the last episode.
So three times all the way through so far.
Really? Wait, is it all the way done?
No,
not yet.
Oh, I've just watched everything that's out so far three times.
Okay, yeah, it's good. I'm probably gonna actually go and do that right now. I only watched the episodes that we watched.
Well, the next three premiere at midnight tonight on top of that. Which is midnight tonight, our time, not podcast time. Sorry, podcast listeners.
So they'll be out by that point.
Yeah.
Which means there'll be a total of how many episodes?
Nine.
Oh, bless. Bless the Lord. Oh, my fuck. All right. Well, on that note, thank you all for listening.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gavin.
Thanks, Gavin. Get some sleep, you fucking insomniacs.
Balls, you fucking idiots.
Lord, I just pray that my future wife, whoever she is less Proverbs 31 and more Judges 4:21. You know what I mean.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Angsty Christian Podcast. Please make sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at the Angsty Christian Pod.
And if you really, really like our show and you want to support us, make sure to go over to our Patreon. Thank you, Mom. And become one of our backers.
And if you would like to email us about literally anything, you hate us, you like us, you want to be with us, whatever, I don't care, email us at angstychristianpodcast@gmail.com. Also realize when I said that, it sounds like you want to be in a relationship with us. Well, two of us are single, but please don't. That's weird.
I'll hold your hand.
Anyways, all music is done by Brad Tsushima. He is a homie. Thank you so much, Brad. We love you.